Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly or bi-weekly, vigorous, relentless, and frequently ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the Well Armed Studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin, the very Well Armed Studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. I'm just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism here these days. And I would encourage you to be a part of the program, part of the show, by your calls or your comments. If we have any live, I'm still doing my scattered timed. Start times for the show. And I said that once it was winter that we were going to be doing those more regularly, like trying to get to like a 8 o'clock start or a 7 o'clock start, but weather's still good. So I've been keeping myself busy doing all the things that you can't do in the wintertime here in Wisconsin. So still a little bit late for that reason. We no live listeners in the show right now, cause I didn't even put the show up till 9:15. So hopefully some people, well, the people that catch it on podcast will catch it. They didn't want to go 2 weeks without a show. And I did have a couple topics I wanted to get to, some that were timely, especially with the new legislation getting introduced in Wisconsin. So we'll hit it right off here. Here we are I guess I should give you the ways to interact with the show. You can call 563-999-3787, 563-999-3787. If you're listening live, you can comment in the chat on the Blog Talk Radio site. You can send me an email, nik@wisconsincarry.org, or you can also comment on the Well Armed Radio Facebook page. Did I just say Facebook? Oh, that's a kind of Well Armed Radio MeWe page, and I will try to catch it there. But like I said, I wasn't expecting a live listenership tonight because I put the show up about 5 minutes ago, and then here we are going live. So, oh, you know what? And you know what I forgot? I was going to do prop comedy, and I don't, should I do it? Hang on. All right. You got to, what do I have? I am going to play you a 5-second clip from Ronald Reagan while I run and get something that we're going to need for my prop comedy. So
the future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted. It belongs to the brave.
All right. So we're back. And this is what I needed for prop comedy. Do you hear that? That is my ivermectin that I think I had COVID back in March of 2020. I was at a trade show in Chicago where it was later reported that someone had it, but that's when COVID was supposedly going around or starting to go around or hadn't yet gone around. They said there was like case number one, case number zero in Madison, Wisconsin, and there was a couple cases out in the Washington area. Well, of course, this coronavirus had been going around for a while before that. We know that now. But so I'm pretty sure I had it. It was the weirdest flu that I'd have ever had because I had a cough. I was feeling run down and had a fever for a day. And then that kind of went away relatively quickly. But what didn't go away was for like a week afterwards, I had just like my lungs were like real crackly. Wasn't coughing, wasn't productive, but it just had like when I would sleep at night, I could just hear my lungs crackling. And I've heard that one of the things with coronavirus is that it's just it's a very dry cough, but it's a lot of inflammation. So again, it makes me, I wouldn't bet my life that I had COVID back in March of 2020, but I'm pretty sure that I did. I'd just say I'm 90% sure. And reasons that I continue to believe that is also because I haven't gotten it since. My daughter had COVID and I was sitting hanging out with her late last year on the yacht in the enclosed cockpit of the yacht for, you know, I don't know how long. And at home at my fiance's house, and I didn't get it from her. Although I did feel like the Monday after when she was sick, and then we were hanging out all week, and I felt like the Monday after or that Sunday, I felt like I was, I don't know what the word to describe it is. I felt like I was coming down with something, and then it went away. And so like, you know, I wondered if having already previously been exposed, if the re-exposure just kind of made me feel like I was again coming down with something, but because I had already had it, that I, you know, fought it off without actually getting sick. You just had that feeling. Again, it's that feeling you get like the day before you get a cold, where you just feel a little bit. I don't know how to describe it. You know what I'm talking about though. When you just feel like you're not sick yet, but you just feel like maybe you're going to get sick. You just feel it coming. Anyway, that's what I felt like after my daughter came down with COVID. Now, she didn't go get tested, but her boyfriend came down with COVID. He got tested, and he was positive, and then she lost her sense of taste and smell. And so even though she never went and got tested, I mean, I would bet a whole lot of money that that she had COVID. So again, so I'm 90% sure that I had COVID, but I'm not 100% sure. And I've you know, lost a lot of, well, I can't call it losing weight because I, in bodybuilding, it's just cutting. So I've cut about, since 2015, in 2015, I was at my heaviest. I was like 307. Good evening. We've got Bringing It Boy, who's logged in tonight on the chat. So we do have someone in here live. Great to have you in. But you know, being a bodybuilder, again, they call it, when you lose weight, you call it cutting, not losing weight. But so I was 307 there, and then I dropped back down to about 297, which is where I'd been for the last 15, 20 years, about 297. And then in January of 2020, I decided I was going to start cutting. And then this is pre-COVID, but then it turned out it was kind of, timing was kind of good, because the best way to make yourself better adept at handling COVID is to lose weight. You know, and being a bodybuilder, I've always wondered, like, because, you know, you're the excess muscle, that's weight, but it's not the same as fat. But, you know, it's still, I mean, of course, I wasn't super, super cut and lean. But so anyway, point being, I've dropped, I'm down to 259. I was first time in the 250s. So I'm about 40 pounds down from when I started in January 2020 cutting. Try to lose about a half a pound a week. I'm real regimented with my food. But anyway, my point being, I don't think I'm high risk. I'm 46 years old. I don't think I'm high risk for COVID complications. You know, they say 40 and over is where there's, you're not likely to die, but you're more likely to have hospitalizations. 65 and older with pre-existing conditions like obesity, heart issues, and type 2 diabetes. Those are the people that really, really, really don't do well with COVID. And so just as a safety, as a precaution, I'm like, you know, I want to get my hands on some ivermectin just so that if I do get it, I can, you know, take that. And so there's telemedicine. I found a telemedicine. If anybody's looking for a source, feel free to shoot me an email, nik@wisconsincarry.org, and I'll let you know where I went for mine. And I ordered it, I don't know, it probably took 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks to get. I ordered it, again, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it finally came in. So I'm glad to have that. Hopefully don't need it. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But nonetheless, that's my, there, what you hear right there is my ivermectin that I ordered from. The place I ordered from is called Seven Cells, I believe. Let me see if I got the, I don't know if I have it handy here. Yeah, it was called Seven Cells. Here it is. Sevencells.com. Oh, I guess I just went to their, they're putting in a new website. So I guess you can't go there. That's where I got it. It's still, their holder page is still up. Seven, spelled out SevenCells.com. That's where I went. And this was, again, probably about a month ago at the time. Now their website, they say they've got a brand new site coming soon. Thanks for your patience while we complete our migration. Drop your name and email below to be notified as soon as the site is live. And they've got their contact info and stuff. But anyway, so I've that's where I ordered mine, and I've got it, and my ivermectin. And so, or as CNN calls it, horse dewormer. What a joke. How completely dishonest for CNN to sit there. Joe Rogan came down with COVID, and he was prescribed ivermectin, and then he was better like 3 days later. And there was a couple of things he took as well. I forget what he said he took, but ivermectin was one of the things that he took. And then, yeah, he said 3 days later he was better. And, of course, CNN comes on right away and says, oh, Joe Rogan took horse dewormer. And it's just totally disingenuous because he was prescribed ivermectin by a doctor. Ivermectin has been a therapeutic for human beings for, I don't know, 20 years more. A very effective medication, very low incidence of contraindications. Is that the word for side effects? See, now I'm going to outkick my coverage here. My fiance is she's a nurse, used to work in the ER. Now she just transferred to an ambulatory service surgery center. But I forget the word for, I think it's contraindications. I think that's the medical term. Whenever my fiance starts talking medical, I just say English. And then, what does she say? Oh, her cousin had a syncopatic episode. I'm like, what? She's like, well, she fainted. I'm like, well, just say she fainted. She's like, oh, no, it's a medical person thing. What else? I get a bruise or something. Oh, my gosh, Nick, that's a big hematoma. I'm like, what? Oh, that's a big bruise. Just say a bruise. Anyway, so here I am trying to sound all medically in the lingo, in the vernacular, but side effects. Ivermectin has very few side effects. So pick some of that up. I've got it. If I get come down with COVID, then I feel like, but here's the thing. I don't know about you guys, but this is the first time in my life, like I completely mistrust the medical system. I mean, I've mistrusted the government for a long, long, long time. And there's a lot of other things that I mistrust, but I mean, now like I mistrust I've lost all trust in the medical system with seeing how they've done with COVID, seeing how the treatments, it's kind of like stuff people on ventilators. And I think there's, I don't know if you guys, I guess you still have to, well, I hate using that term, conspiracy theory, but there's speculation. And it's a clear conflict of interest. You're bringing a boy says I mistrust the FBI. Oh, for sure. I mean, there's another one that I've mistrusted for a long time. The FBI. I'd have to sit here and brainstorm all the things that I mistrust out there, but the media, of course, being at the top of the list, I've mistrusted them. We've all mistrusted the media for decades, but. I used to have faith in the American medical system, and I don't anymore. I mean, the speculation, again, call it conspiracy theory if you want. For every patient that goes on a ventilator, the government pays hospitals like, what, $37,000? I forget the number. For every patient that dies, every patient that goes in that's treated for COVID, it's a big money game. The vaccines are a big money game for the pharmaceutical companies. The hospitalizations are a big money game for hospitals. And then I think that the hospitals, at the administration level, have relationships with these big pharmacy companies, because it just doesn't make sense why Aurora, which is the largest healthcare provider in Wisconsin, and it's now merged with Aurora Advocate, so it's, I don't know how that changes. But Aurora is like the largest healthcare provider in the state of Wisconsin. They came out from an administrative level and said that their doctors are not allowed to prescribe that ivermectin for treating COVID is not an approved. And boxing commission, things that bring the boy doesn't trust boxing commission, another good one. Throw politicians up there too. I mean, any politician, that's something that we haven't trusted for years. But Aurora comes out and says that they're prohibiting the treatment of COVID using ivermectin, in spite of the fact that we've got peer-reviewed studies that say that ivermectin works very well to treat COVID. There's peer-reviewed studies that talk about, there's countries where they've used ivermectin prolifically and had very positive results. There's a case studies. There's a, I think it was a retirement home. It was a medical facility up in Canada where there was an outbreak of scabies. Well, ivermectin is a treatment that's used to treat scabies. This medical facility up in Canada that had this outbreak of scabies in April of 2020. So that was right during the first, you know, during the big coronanoia flare up back in, you know, when we were still doing lockdowns and all that stuff. And so the residents, these elderly residents on the fourth floor of this medical facility up in Canada, I forget the name of it, but I just saw this on a documentary last week. Not a documentary, it was a in-depth investigative report on, I believe it was on One American News. And so on this fourth floor of this medical unit, up this medical facility up in Canada, there was an outbreak of scabies. All the residents of that fourth floor were then given ivermectin because ivermectin is a treatment for scabies. Scabies is, I know scabies is a sexually transmitted disease, but I think scabies can be transmitted otherwise. I think scabies is like, what's the other word for scabies? It's not pubic lice. That's it. I think scabies is pubic lice. I'm pretty sure. Not positive. I'm pretty sure scabies is pubic lice. So the ivermectin is a treatment for scabies. So you get a scabies outbreak up in this medical unit in this facility up in Canada. All the residents on the fourth floor were treated with ivermectin for the scabies. The residents in the floors above and below were treated prophylactically, so they got a smaller dose of ivermectin as a prophylactic. The people that were on that floor, the fourth floor, were treated with ivermectin from the full standard dosing because they had scabies. Nobody on the fourth floor came down with COVID. And I think the incidence of COVID on the other floors that were given the prophylactics was exceptionally low. Meanwhile, the hospital staff, the medical facility staff that weren't treated with COVID, weren't treated with ivermectin, they had staff that came down with COVID, staff that were treating patients with COVID, but none of the residents of that fourth floor got COVID. I mean, I'm telling you, and I've seen, I think his name's Peter Corey. He's been on the conservative talk show circuit enough that I remember his name, Peter Corey. He's talked about how effective ivermectin, and again, he's, as a medical professional, he doesn't want to call something a wonder drug, but he said that they're just getting amazing results from ivermectin, even in advanced cases of coronavirus. He said it's, again, there's peer-reviewed studies about how effective it is. There's other countries that have used it very effectively. But here in this country, they still, and again, I think it's because there's no other conclusion you can come to. Well, actually, there's two. One is that the drug companies don't want you to take a $5 pill when you can take a $4,000 pill, remdesivir, which Fauci was touting remdesivir last spring, like in April of 2020. And it's this $4,000 a dose, $4,000 a treatment medicine, the drug, this $4,000 a dose therapeutic from one of the drug companies that he's involved with. Yet hospitals are coming out and prohibiting the administration of ivermectin for the treatment of COVID. Aurora, this is here in Wisconsin, Aurora is coming out. And then Aurora is prohibiting their pharmacies from prescribing ivermectin for the treatment of coronavirus. So doctors aren't allowed to prescribe it. The Aurora pharmacies aren't allowed to fill prescriptions for ivermectin for anything. This is just, I mean, it's like organized crime. I mean, the refusal to, you would think with something that's as bad as they say coronavirus is, they'd be willing to throw anything at it that they could. You know, you've got all these right to try laws and everything. But anyway, I picked up my ivermectin from everything I've read and studied, and it's more than your average dope. I believe that stuff works. So I got it just in case. Again, I think I already had coronavirus. I don't know if, but I don't think my doctor is, my primary care doctor, I haven't been to in a couple of years. He's not with Aurora. He's with, it was Columbia St. Mary's. And then I don't know, did Ascension buy them out? So anyway, he's not with Aurora, but I don't know that he would prescribe it. And I wanted to call and ask. I wanted to call and say, because that was my thing. If I come down with coronavirus, well, I'll just ask my doctor if I can get prescribed ivermectin. I don't know if he would or wouldn't prescribe it. And if he won't, then you're under the gun. If you have COVID, if you're symptomatic, again, I had to wait 3 weeks to get my ivermectin. Maybe it was four. I wasn't counting. I could figure it out. I can go back and look when I ordered it. But, you know, if I was sick, you don't have 3 weeks to wait. You can't wait till you get sick. So, again, that's why I sent it and got some ivermectin. You have to do a telemedicine thing. You pay for the consult with a doctor. And then, I got my ivermectin. So other things we can talk about. If anybody caught the last episode, I was in a pissy mood last time I did a broadcast because I came home from golfing and a garden hose that I have in my garage had burst and was spraying water all over my $4,000 Dualtron Thunder electric scooter. The good news, the scooter's in good. I waited a couple days, blew the water off of it with my air compressor, which maybe was a bad idea because, you know, blowing with air compressor might actually push water further into the deep places of the scooter, the electronics. But so waited like a day, stuck it in front of the dehumidifier, blowing on it to dry it out. Come home from the gym the next day. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this thing for a spin to make sure it works. Turn it on. It fires right up. Go cruising down the street. The only thing was the throttle, which is has an LCD screen on it. It was a little bit cloudy and it just didn't soak it right. I do have a bag, like all those little silica packets that come in medicine. They come in some electronics. I keep a Ziploc bag full of those silica packets. I don't know how I would dip my, I guess you could have bought a whole bunch of rice and dip my whole scooter in it. But I don't know if you've seen a Dualtron scooter, bringing it, boy, but it's big. The Dualtron scooters are big. You can Google it, Dualtron Thunder scooter. And I take it down the street. It's working fine. I'm like, great, dodged a bullet. You know, it's okay. But then as I come back up the street, turn into my driveway, I think making that left turn and just the angle of the handlebars, there had to still be some water in the throttle because the throttle starts malfunctioning and starts hitting, you know, to give it throttle when I'm not giving it throttle. Well, how am I supposed to jump off this thing? The Dualtron Thunder is super, it's just 50 miles. The thing goes 50 miles an hour and it's got about a 75 mile range on it. Now, probably not with my, you know, 259 pound ass on it, but for a average size rider, which is, I think the thing's made in Korea. I think that's where it's from. So, I mean, figure Koreans, they're smaller stature people. Maybe the, you know, 175 might be a typical. So for a 175-pound person, it goes 50 miles an hour and has a 75-mile range. For me, I've had it up to about 45, 47. I don't think – maybe going down a hill, I've had it up to 50. And I'm sure that I wouldn't get 75 miles range out of it, and certainly not the way I ride it. But this thing's fast. I mean, it's like the Tesla of scooters. I can – from a stoplight, I can dust I can dust a car off of the line for like the first, well, pretty much across the intersection. Obviously cars go much faster than 50 miles an hour. So then but this thing is, both the front and the back wheel of this scooter are powered there. It's a two wheel drive scooter. And there's only two wheels on a scooter, obviously. So it's all wheel drive. And this thing, it'll spin the tires on dry pavement. I mean, that's how powerful this thing is. Those electric motors right off the line. But yeah, so it's malfunctioning, and I'm like, God damn it, I shouldn't. And then the screen just goes dark. And I'm like, shoot. So I jump off of it, hoping it doesn't lurch out of my hands, hit the master power, which is on the underside of the board of the deck, and shut it off, bring it back home. I end up taking apart the throttle. There's water inside of the throttle. Dry that out, leave it in front of the dehumidifier for a couple of days, put it all back together like later that week, and luckily it works. And I've now tested, take it for spin. And so I totally dodged a bullet. I thought that I had, and the thing was, I saw the bulge in this hose, because I use these hoses in my garage to wash and wax my truck in the garage all winter long. And I saw one of the hoses had a bulge in it. And I thought, you know, maybe I should replace that before it pops. But I'm like, ah, you know, they're reinforced. If it pops, maybe it'll just be a leak. Anyway, lesson learned. But yeah, so scooter's good. Next thing I was going to talk about tonight was if anybody's looking for kayaks, I just bought, so the yacht is almost put away for the year. We had the yacht out on Saturday. Fall boating is my favorite time of boating. You know, you get a nice 60, 65 degree day, and it's just gorgeous out there on the Milwaukee Harbor. And but then the only bad thing is, you know, there's not many days like that left. So we did have the yacht out on Saturday. Hopefully, I'm hoping for another time or two. You know, if I had another 2 weeks on it, I'd be pretty happy. But then I love being on the water. And so you guys, if you've listened to the show for any period of time, know that after yachting season is over, after boating season is over, then we take the dog hiking every Saturday somewhere in the Kettle Moraine here in Wisconsin. And that's our Saturday hikes. After we get done hiking, we do a little tailgating in the back of the truck, you know, a couple drinks. I mean, that's the best part of the hike, is the tailgate afterwards, a couple cocktails, adult beverages, some snacks. And so to accentuate that adventure, I thought, you know, it'd be fun. Some of these places we go hiking, there's like little ponds, and kind of like up in the Kettle Moraine, there's these remote lakes like Mauthe Lake's a more recreational lake. It's got a little tiny boat launch for small fishing boats and stuff. But out in the southern Kettle Moraine, there's one called Lake LaGrange, which is kind of isolated. There's no public access to that. I mean, you have to carry a canoe or portage a kayak in there, and then to get on that. There's just a bunch of little Rome Pond up by Dousman. We hike up there sometimes. So there's all these little places where any sightings of Nessie when you're out in the water? None yet, but I'm keeping my eyes out. So I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun. Obviously not something we're going to do in the cold part of winter, but like in the late fall, you know, if it's 45 degrees and a sunny day, it'd be kind of cool to, you know, throw a canoe or something on one of these little remote ponds / lakes that's out somewhere in the Kettle Moraine, and just do a little paddle around. Down by Palmyra, there's like Spring Lake and just some of the little creeks and stuff that are around. And I used to have fun growing up in Delavan and the Darien area. Turtle Creek was a really fun place to go canoeing and stuff. So I was like, you know, kayaks are popular now. So I started looking at kayaks. If you're in the market for a kayak, I'm the guy to talk to. I've done the research. I've picked up a couple. I bought a Ascend, which is kind of, I don't know if it's Cabela's brand, but they stock them at Cabela's, an Ascend D10. Just took that one out tonight. That's actually why I was late getting the show started tonight, because we took that out for a little bit of a spin up at the Nagawaki, on Nagawaki Lake, the boat launch up there. And so cool little kayak. The D10, I paddled it around. It's okay for me, but that one I got for my fiance. She's, you know, less than half my weight. I mean, I'm 262, and she's about 130. So 125, 130. So she paddled that around. She liked it. Really good size for her. So for a chick, that Ascend D10 is a cool little kayak. I, for myself, got the Ascend, what's it called? The H12. It's a 12 footer. It's called a hybrid. So it's kind of a hybrid kayak canoe. But that one's big enough to where I think I could get the dog in it. We've got a 107-pound German Shepherd, Gus, who likes to come on our hikes with us. And so, yeah, I'm kind of excited for this late fall after we get the yacht put away and winterized for the year down at the Marina Skipper Buds on the KK River in Milwaukee. Hiking season starts, and I think we're going to try doing some of these. We'll probably still hike a little bit, and then I call it paddle gating. We're going to get the kayaks out, pull them out of the back of the truck, and throw the coolers in there and go for a little paddle and catch some nice views. And I think it'll just be nice and peaceful just to be out on these little remote lakes and things that are accessible by kayak. And again, some of them have little boat launches for very, very small boats. Here, bringing a boy says, sounds like Gus should do the paddling. Yeah, I'm just hoping Gus sits his ass down. Like he's a high energy German Shepherd. he's 5 years old now, but I mean, the kid's full of energy. He's in great shape. His dad was a show dog. So, I mean, when I say 107 pounds, he's a very, very lean 107 pounds. The kid's, he's a piece of muscle, but, I'm just hoping he'll sit still. The kayak that I got is kind of the hybrid, that H12, the Ascend H12. So it's longer, wider, more stable. My fiance, her little D10, he wouldn't fit in there with her. And he's not chill enough. I mean, that one's just more narrow and more tippy, to use a kayaky term. But I'm just hoping he'll sit chill with me and mine while we go paddling. So, but I think it'll be fun just to, the fisherman must love you with him barking. So where we go, there really wouldn't, I've never seen, like Mauthy Lake has fishermen on it, but most of the other places that we intend to go, I don't see fishermen. Like Lake LaGrange, I've never seen anybody fishing on it. Never even seen a boat on it. When I say we're really looking for some bat, we're really planning on these backcountry. Again, Rome Pond up by Dousman. We've gone hiking up by in the Rome Pond wildlife area. And now we intend to just throw the kayaks in on the Rome Pond and paddle around and do a little hiking first and then throw the cooler in and go paddle off to a remote shore and some of these undeveloped little tiny lakes. And again, I say lakes, they're kind of like ponds, large ponds. So yeah, we're looking forward to that. But if you're in the market for a kayak, I've been doing the research. So feel free to hit me up and I'll give you some of my analysis, some of my, what do they call that? Not vetting, curating. I've curated the kayak selection for you. next thing I was going to talk about, 2A Tuesday. So I've reintroduced 2A Tuesday. How many long ago was that? It was over a year. Gosh, spring 2019, I think, was when I first introduced, late spring 2019. In fact, I think that's what it was because that's when we won our lawsuit against Marcosan. Marcosan High School prohibited a student from wearing a T-shirt with depictions of guns on it. They were nonviolent, non-threatening, but so we sued Marcosan High School. I say we, Wisconsin Carry Fund, of the lawsuit, and it was on behalf of Matthew Schoenecker, who's the son of a member of Wisconsin Carry. So we were successful in that lawsuit. And my goal with this was, as I've said before, in order for legislation does not lead cultural change, legislation follows cultural change. That's the case with the civil rights. The civil rights movement had already taken place. The civil rights movement had already been successful before the Civil Rights Act. The Civil Rights Act was just a bunch of politicians glomming on to the concept of civil rights for political advantage. And that's what legislation is. That's what legislation has been. It's kind of changing now with these radicals in Congress. They don't have the consent of the governed, but they have power. And when you're not worried about the electoral system, you don't really need to glom on to popular movements for political advantage, because without free and fair elections, you don't need to appeal to the voters. You can just, again, steal elections. So what we're seeing right now in D.C. is not what I would call capturing cultural movements. What we're seeing right now in D.C. is authoritarian, totalitarian passage of radical bullshit because you have power and you're not respecting of the will of the voters because you know you stole the last election and you know you don't. Joe Biden didn't get 81 million votes. I mean, we don't need to re-litigate that here on the show. We talked about it before. But my point being, traditionally, and still is the case for Republicans, legislation doesn't lead. Legislators are not innovators. They don't come up with these great new trends and ideas and promote them, and everybody starts following them, and all of a sudden then you have a civil rights movement. That's not how it went. You had grassroots activists and people in media pushing the civil rights movement. And then after the civil rights movement had already caught on, after the tide had turned with regard to civil rights in this country, then the politicians got glommed on, and then the politicians wanted to pass the Civil Rights Act and create all the political opportunism from that. Same thing with gay rights. This is not a statement on gay rights, not a statement of support for gay rights. I'm just merely pointing out the strategy that worked. Back in the early 90s, when Bill Clinton was president and homosexuality was becoming a topic and same-sex marriage and all that stuff, there was the Defense of Marriage Act. Marriage is between a man and a woman. There was court cases. There was, I'm sure, referendums. But there was political issues. And gay rights lost at every turn. It lost at the ballot box. It lost in court. It lost in the court of public opinion. Gay rights was just losing back in the early 90s. Even people that would say, well, you know, it's fine if that's what you want to do, but, you know, keep it in your own bedroom or whatever. But the gay rights crowd, they didn't go about getting laws passed and victories in court. Again, the Democrats, Bill Clinton, signed the Defense of Marriage Act, which same-sex couples would have been completely against. So the point being that Brianna Boyce is prop here in California, but we won, but the courts overturned it on us. Yeah, I've heard people talking about Prop 8. I'm not super familiar with what that is, but my point being that using gay rights as an example, as the strategy, the gay rights movement lost at every opportunity, lost at every venue, lost in court, lost in the legislatures. There was legislation being passed against gay marriage. So what did the progressives do? They set out to fight the cultural war. They started, and it started even with the things that rub people the wrong way, like gay rights parades, gay parades that were very offensive to some people. Some people that were even homosexual thought, you know, that's too much. That's too much in people's faces. It's too shocking for people. But what we saw with gay rights is they fought the cultural war. When they lost at every opportunity, when they lost at every venue, lost at the ballot box, lost in court, they set about a cultural change. They put gay characters in television shows. Then they made first it was gay characters in television shows. And then it was shows about the gay lifestyle, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. So they normalized and they used the cultural movement, the media, entertainment. They used that to push the culture of gay rights. And then look what we have now 20 years later. DOMA struck down by a conservative majority Supreme Court. All kinds of court victories, legislative victories for gay rights. And again, this is not a statement about gay rights. It's just saying that that's what they did, is they fought the cultural war. And now it's just over the top. I mean, now it's just everywhere. I mean, you can't turn on a show. Million Little Things. My fiance and I watched that. Now that's got, you know, lesbian relationships coming to fruition. It's everywhere. They won the cultural war, and now even case law is following because the cultural war has been won. We in the gun rights, if you think the Second Amendment is going to protect gun rights, I think you're sorely mistaken. The Second Amendment will not protect your gun rights. It'll get whittled away with in courts, It'll get whittled away in the court of public opinion. It'll get whittled away with legislation. And even things that right now you might have a ruling in your favor at the court level, or even the Supreme Court, there's a lot of litigation left for the Second Amendment before the Second Amendment would have the kind of bulletproof protection. And I would submit that there is never bulletproof protection for the Second Amendment, because even if it's completely legal to own any kind of gun you wanted, which it's not, but you know, even if the courts decided the assault weapons bans are unconstitutional, magazine capacity limits are unconstitutional, bump stock bans are unconstitutional, concealed carry permits are unconstitutional, even if that happened, and it's not about to, but even if that happened, look at what else they're doing. They're making self-defense illegal. Look at Kyle Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse is on trial down in Kenosha for something that's on video, clearly self-defense. But that's what they want to do. They want to – so it doesn't matter. Even if it's legal to own your gun, possess your gun, carry your gun, by golly, they'll make it illegal to use your gun. They'll make it a moot point to be able to carry. I mean, hell, even if the court said that you have the right to carry select fire weaponry, doesn't matter what you can carry if using it, because that's the purpose of a gun, is self-defense. If using it is going to end up with you in jail for the rest of your life, people are just going to say, screw it, I'd rather just take my chances rather than use my gun and then end up in jail. So again, the Second Amendment will not protect your right to keep and bear arms. Legislation will not protect your right to keep and bear arms. Laws will not protect your right to keep and bear arms. Shall issue permit systems will not protect your right to keep and bear arms. If we lose the cultural war, our gun rights are gone. So when I talk about the gay rights, how they won the cultural war, that's the strategy we need to use for gun rights. We need to win the cultural war. Well, how do we win the cultural war? We know that in schools, for the first 18 years of a kid's life, their guns are demonized, guns are terrible, guns are evil. Kids are taught that guns are just this terrible thing. They're not taught about the heritage of guns. They're not taught about the fantastic history of guns and what guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, average ordinary people, have meant to freedom. I mean, this country gained its independence from Great Britain, from England, with guns in the hands of ordinary citizens. Guns in the hands of ordinary citizens allowed us to settle this country. The pioneers, it put meat on the table. They provided protection from wild animal attack, protection from criminal attack, protection from all kinds of things, in addition to putting protein on the table for pioneer families. Go to World War I and World War II, a rifle in the hands of 18 and 19 and 20-year-old young men delivered the world from tyranny. Now, again, that was under the service, in the service of the military. But even today, guns deliver millions of people from harm every year. I think the estimate is, what, 2.2 million? Estimated defensive uses of a gun every year. So the heritage of the firearm in this country is amazing. It's awe-inspiring. The what this country owes the firearm in the hands of law-abiding citizens. And so but that's not taught in schools. Kids are taught guns are evil, guns are bad, and they should be taught that. They should be taught, I believe kids should be taught, because I think it's accurate history, to teach the heritage of firearms in this country. Instead, they're demonized. It's not even no education on guns, it's demonization of guns. So if you've got 18 years of kids' lives, demonization against guns, again, you're not going to have a pro-gun culture in this country in a generation. What did Ronald Reagan say? Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. You don't pass it down to your offspring in their blood. It needs to be continually, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the rest of the quote word for word, but each generation you have to engage, re-foster the belief in freedom. And we're losing that here in this country. And so if we want to protect the Second Amendment, if we want to protect the right to keep our arms, we have to win the cultural war. Well, how do we win the cultural war? I've brainstormed ideas. Well, one way we can do it is, I believe, open carrying. That's why I open carry. Because if people see guns, they get normalized to guns. If a kid sees a guy, kid goes to school, teacher tells him how evil guns are, then he goes to Pick and Save with his mom for grocery shopping and sees this dude walking down the aisle, picking up a can of peas off the shelf with a gun on his hip. That blows away all that anti-gun bullshit that kid was just had stuffed down his face from his school teacher for the first 18 years of his life. Or in the case of a, you know, elementary school kid, the first 10 years of their life. So that's one thing that you can do, open carry. Open carry is a little too much for some people. They are not comfortable with that. 2A Tuesday. Originally, 2A Tuesday was something to foster a pro-gun sense of pride, gun pride, in the younger generation, in school-age kids, because that's a generation that we want to foster gun pride in. It never really caught on. I mean, some people participated. The thought was, this is when I originally introduced it, 2A Tuesday, after these legal victories, we've got the law on our side, case law on our side. Have your kids wear pro-gun apparel to school. If they get so much as sent to the principal's office, Wisconsin Carry will sue them. And then put these kids with their pro-gun apparel, post to social media, which kids love to do, with the hashtag 2A Tuesday. Every Tuesday with your pro-gun shirt, your NRA shirt, your, you know, Smith & Wesson shirts, your gun-themed shirts, Wisconsin Carry shirts, just and post to social media on Tuesdays with the hashtag 2A Tuesday. Make it go viral. And then first it's just the pro-gun kids, and then the kids that aren't even pro-gun, they want to be part of the cool crowd. So they just start, you know, getting gun T-shirts. Anybody can buy a gun T-shirt, a T-shirt with a picture of a gun on it. It never really took off. It took off in some pockets, did a lot of good. I mean, there's a kid down in Kenosha, I believe, Kenosha area. I've had him on the show a long time ago, talked about it. But he participates in 2A Tuesday and made a huge difference in his elementary school. Got sent to the principal's office. I sent his dad the link to the article in Journal Sentinel where we won the lawsuit in Marquesan. His dad sent that to the administrator. The administrator checked with their district council. And the district's council, the district attorney, not the district attorney, not the DA, but the school district's attorney, said to allow the kid to wear the T-shirt. So here's this kid in, I don't know what grade he was, but his name's Ben. Benny, wearing his pro-gun T-shirts, and all his kids in his class saw him get sent to teachers, the principal's office. And then all of a sudden, now he's back wearing his pro-gun T-shirts, and all his kids in his class know that you're allowed to wear pro-gun shirts. And it just, that makes a huge difference. That's just one school, one kid. All that said, 2A Tuesday just didn't catch on. I think parents were too afraid to have their kids wearing the gun stuff. They didn't want little Johnny or little Jane to get their, you know, I think it's a mistake to not stand up and fight. But nonetheless, 2A Tuesday, again, it just didn't quite catch like I was hoping that it would. But that's the reason that I'm reintroducing. And this time it's the adults. We adults, we got to be the ones to lead that. I had always theorized, what if 2A Tuesday, think of how awesome it would be if just like the ice bucket challenge went viral, what if 2A Tuesday could go that viral? We would be winning the culture war. And then once we win the culture war, once guns are cool, once guns are considered, once we win that culture war, politicians will be falling over themselves to pass pro-gun legislation because they'll know it's politically advantageous. Again, that's, politicians are reactive, not proactive. They do not start cultural trends. They glom onto cultural trends after they become the majority held view. And that's the reason that we need to drive the cultural change. We can do it by open carrying. Now, I propose that we do it with 2A Tuesday. It didn't catch on with the kids, even though I thought that was a great angle. Now, I think I'm reintroducing it because it needs to catch on with the adults. So on Tuesdays, wear your gun T-shirts, your Wisconsin Carry T-shirts, your AR-15 T-shirts, your pro-gun stuff, your National Rifle Association t-shirts. Wear your pro-gun stuff on Tuesdays. Take a picture. Post it to social media. Put the hashtag 2A Tuesday. And I'm going to go around and look and select a winner every week and send them either a Wisconsin Carry hat or a t-shirt or some embroidered apparel. But that's what we got to do. We got to win that culture war. And again, 2A Tuesday was originally targeted at school-age kids, but that just wasn't the right angle, perhaps. I still think it's a good angle, but just wasn't the angle that it was going to get traction. So we got to get the traction here amongst us. We adults, we pro-gun folks, you know, if you don't have a dress code for work, wear your pro-gun stuff on Tuesdays. And even if you can't, there's all kinds of ways to participate in 2A Tuesday. If you can't wear pro-gun stuff to work, you know, take a picture of yourself with a firearm. Or even if you're out on the weekend at the range, take a picture and then on Tuesday, post it to social media and put the hashtag 2A Tuesday on. It doesn't have to be, it could be wearing a t-shirt to work or to, you know, the gym or whatever, but there's a million different ways to participate in 2A Tuesday. But the key thing is we got to drive this cultural change, and that's what 2A Tuesday is all about. Another quick one. I'm going to be, I said this before, and it's coming to be fall and we're getting close to where it's time, you know, summer, everybody's busy doing all the other stuff. Wisconsin Carry, I'm going to get the Wisconsin Carry email mailings going again. We stopped using email when we started relying on fascist book. And obviously we know what a mistake that was. So I think that mass email is going to be a better solution for Wisconsin Carry to communicate with our members. So I'm very close to selecting a provider. Right now I'm thinking it's going to be mail or light. It doesn't matter to you guys, but the important thing is going to be once I do, I've got everybody's email address, all of the Wisconsin Carry members. I don't have, obviously, the email addresses from all the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group members, because some of those were Facebook group members but not dues-paying members. Here, bring it to voices, how you feel about Kyle Rittenhouse. I think Kyle Rittenhouse is, I don't want to call him a hero because I think he's a very principled kid. I admire his courage to want to go help out there in Kenosha. I think he acted in self-defense. But I'm going to be – his trial starts, I think, November 1st is when his trial starts. And I'm going to be doing a lot of weekly coverage and updates here on Well Armed Radio. I'm going to be following that trial very closely. Back to email. Because of the censorship on Facebook, because MeWe as an alternative to Facebook just hasn't really caught on. It just doesn't have the reach and the participation. I think email is going to be the best way for Wisconsin Carry to get our information out to our members. And for that reason, after I get the Wisconsin Carry email list serve set back up, you'll want to make sure that you're subscribed to it. And so I'll be sending information around about that. Okay. I should have gotten this earlier. We've only got 15 minutes left in the show here. Hunter Nation and the new legislative tactic in Wisconsin. So there's been a package of bills introduced at the Wisconsin legislature. And I put a link on Wisconsin Carry on the Facebook, on the MeWe page. And I think I had someone post it on the Facebook group as well. But a package of bills is being introduced in the Wisconsin legislature. There's 13 different bills that all have to do with hunting regulations and carry rights. A constitutional carry bill, which doesn't at the time it didn't have a bill number. It might have a bill number now. This I started making these notes about a week and a half ago. But a constitutional carry bill has been introduced in this package of bills. It's sponsored by Mary Felskowski and Rob Brooks. Now, Hunter Nation is an organization that was put together back in 2018. Now, I didn't read all the hunting bills, but I did read the constitutional carry bill, and it looks similar to other constitutional carry bills from a few years ago. Codifies a couple things that we've won by case law. Example, the mask transit carry, Wisconsin Carry versus City of Madison. We had that legal victory at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But written into the constitutional carry bill is codification. Right now, that's just case law that says that you have to allow carry on mass transit, but it's getting written into law in the constitutional carry bill that you cannot prohibit carry on mass transit and public transit. Certain to see a veto by Tony Evers, Governor Skeletor, And I hope the legislature is angling for a veto override versus just a token attempt to play politics and gin up donations from gun owners. But I'm skeptical. Senator Craig, Dave Craig's Conscience for Carry bill a few years ago had no national organizations out front advocating for it. I mean, the NRA made a few announcements, but didn't put its full efforts into it, because I think if they had, it would have passed. If the NRA would have put their full effort behind Senator Craig's constitutional carry bill, I think it would have passed. But back then we had a Republican governor, we had a Republican Senate, and a Republican assembly here in Wisconsin. Now, Hunter Nation didn't exist by my research. They didn't come about till mid-2018-ish. So they weren't really in a position to do anything back then. So I can't blame, I can't say, hey, where was Hunter Nation back in, you know, 2017-18 when we were trying to get, I believe late 2017, fall 2017 was when Dave Craig's bill was introduced. And that's when we did the Free Families from Felonies Fits initiative. We had the highway signs created, the yard signs created. But here we are in Wisconsin. We're trying to, back in 2017-18, with a Republican legislature and a Republican governor, a Republican hat trick, let Senate, Assembly, Governor, we couldn't get gun bills passed. We had to, we gun folks had to fight to try to get gun bills passed with the Republican Senate, Assembly, and Governor. So here, when we have a Democrat governor, it's my solid conclusion after 11 years as the president of Wisconsin Carry, dealing with elected Republicans in Madison, that the primary motivation for 85% of them, the elected Republicans in Madison, is political. You know, advancing freedom is an afterthought, a tactic. It's not a goal. Winning the political game is their goal. Making Tony Evers look bad to get him out of office and get themselves in the governor's office, that's their goal. I mean, this is the reason why. So they love the political attacks. They love to play politics. Sometimes we sit here, I say we, me, and I think I can speak of others as well. We see some of the things these politicians are doing and things that they're making a big deal about on the news about, oh, Joe Biden did this, and don't get me wrong, there's plenty of things that I have issue with Joe Biden done, but Governor Evers did this. It's just playing politics when there's substantive freedom-based issues to call these guys out on, the Democrats out on. But this is the reason why there was legislators in Madison that were putting up Christmas trees while an election was being stolen last December. There was the Wisconsin Capitol was, I think, at the time closed to the public because of coronavirus. So the Capitol wasn't even open to the public. And yet you had these legislators who were putting up a Christmas tree in the Capitol Rotunda. And then Tony Evers was ordering the Department of Administration to take it down. And then these two, I think Shea Sortwell was one of them. And then one other assembly person, they were putting the Christmas tree back up. And it was political theater. While an election was being stolen, that was between the stolen election on November 3rd and inauguration on January 6th. So again, it's my solid conclusion after 11 years in my role as president of Wisconsin Carry that 85% of these Republicans in Madison, it's just their motivation is political. They're not out there. They're not principled. They're not out there to advance freedom. They want power and they want to attack Democrats. They don't want, they want to attack Democrats so they can get in power. They're not interested in focusing on advancing freedom and then appealing to people in that regard. And this is my opinion. So I strongly support these bills that have been introduced and I support the effort as well, but I can't help but wonder if, given the timing, that this is a pure political play, fundraising play, political play for the Madison Republicans and a fundraising play for Hunter Nation. Republican legislators, they want to attack Evers on political angles, and Hunter Nation wants to drive membership and fundraise. Hunter Nation is his new upstart group. I don't know if they're trying to supplant the NRA or if the NRA, all the bad press that the NRA has had, if Hunter Nation's trying to, you know, be the up-and-comer. But why is Hunter Nation throwing so much effort and money? And again, Hunter Nation didn't really exist back in 2017-18. When we were trying to get, I think it was SB 169 through back then, which was the constitutional carry, school grounds carry bill that Senator Craig introduced. But we couldn't even get Senator Fitzgerald, a Republican, to call it for a vote in the Senate. And it just died. It never got a vote. We know why. Scott Walker said, you know, we don't need this. They didn't think that that was something that had any political electoral advantage for them. So why now we have all these Republicans passing this flurries of bills? We've got these 13 bills, hunting bills, constitutional carry bills. There's also a school for a bill for carrying on private school grounds. There's a bill for and churches that are on school grounds. There's a bill for universal recognition of out-of-state permits. Again, all these bills that Tony Evers is likely or almost assuredly going to veto. And again, I can't help but wonder if, given the timing, that this is just political play for Republicans and a fundraiser play for Hunter Nation. Hunter Nation comes out, they push this bill, it doesn't pass. They can blame Tony Evers. Oh, Tony Evers is anti-gun. Tony Evers is anti-gun. Support Hunter Nation. We're going to fight for your gun rights. They expose Tony Evers as the anti-gun zealot that he is. They puff up for gun rights crowds and draw fundraising support. And again, I'll take all the help we can get in Wisconsin. I just hope it's with the goal of passing legislation. If we get a Republican governor in 2022, Will Hunter, whether it's Kevin Nicholson or Becky Clefish or Eric Hovde, or will Hunter Nation be here in 2023 to advocate for bills like this one, like constitutional carry, like these hunters' rights bills? And let's just hope so. So what's my point when I talk about Hunter Nation? And it's just, it's concerning to me that I don't like to see gun owners get played, but you guys are all adults and you can make your own decisions with your money. But my point is, I want to give people this information to think about who you want to give money to, understand what these legislators are doing, and tell you, look, if the Republican caucus wanted these laws passed, if the Republican caucus wanted constitutional carry, they would have had it done in 2017. So what is their motivation now? A year they know that it won't pass. Veto override? I don't think so. You know, when I called on the blanket concealed carry recognition bill, I called and talked to Strobel's office and Gunderson's office. They kind of dithered on the strategy. They're like, well, you know, we just want to get people to get to the hearing. We want to get people to the public hearing. And I don't like that. I mean, just be honest with me, and I'll bust my ass for you. But don't use me. I mean, I just think that's how incredibly disrespectful of my time and of me. This constitutional carry bill has been introduced. Rob Brooks was very motivated to pass school grounds carry back when he was a rookie legislator, several years back when it was Republican controlled assembly, Senate, and we had the governor's office. But Republicans in Madison, and actually Republicans in D.C. as well, they remind me of a drunk little pipsqueak in a bar that's a big talker, all ready to get in a fight when there's a bouncer standing between them and the guy that he's got beef with. But then when the bouncer walks away and you can just go after it, then he's not so tough anymore. Then he wants to work it out and shake it out. No, I mean, that's what Republicans remind me of. Republicans sit here and, oh, they've got all their pro-gun, they're going to introduce all these bills. Do you remember when Republicans in D.C. passed the Obamacare repeal, sent it up to Obama's desk, and he vetoed it? And that was when Obama was president. But then when Trump was president, they couldn't even get the Obamacare repeal bill that had gone up the year before when it was Obama. They couldn't get that bill passed again. And it's like, what the hell? Same people voting on it, still Republican majorities. What you realize is that there was Republicans who, even the skinny repeal, there was that skinny repeal of Obamacare. They couldn't even get that back up to Trump's desk. So what you realize is that Republicans didn't really want to repeal Obamacare. They just wanted to puff up for their conservatives, throw some red meat out to their conservative voters back in their district that, oh, yeah, see, we did it. We repealed Obamacare and Obama vetoed it. But then they didn't really want it, because if they really wanted it, as soon as Trump became president, they could have sent the same bill back up and boom. But then people that supported it the first time around when it wouldn't pass didn't support it the second time when it would have passed. And that's what I think we're going to have here with these constitutional carry bill, with a lot of these bills that are being introduced right now in Madison. You're going to have legislators who are going to be all tough and get it to Tony Evers' desk and, oh, yeah, yeah. But that's just like the little pipsqueak in a bar who's ready to fight when there's a bouncer between them and the other dude, because they know they're not going to get in a fight because the bouncer is going to keep them from getting a fight. So they can talk all as tough as they want, and they can make everybody, oh, hold me there. Everybody's got to hold them back because they're going to go after him. But, you know damn well they're just acting out because they know the bouncer is going to keep you from getting at the other guy. So you can puff up, you can posture and look tough, look like you were Mr. Tough Guy, ready to go knuckle to knuckle. But with the bouncer in the way, it's really easy to talk tough when the other guy can't get to you and you can't get to him. With Governor Evers in the way, it's really easy to send these bills up and say, oh, we tried. So give your money to who you want to give it to. But if you give money to Hunter Nation, my suggestion is, don't become a lifetime member. Just maybe if you want to make a small donation, make a small donation and say, hey, where are you going to be in 2023? If we get a Republican governor, do you commit to being back here? I'm going to lose my live feed here. I'm going to go a little bit over time. But thanks for checking in a live chat here, Bringing a Boy. Hope to catch you in future weeks to see you again. And have a great week and carry on, and talk to you soon. So moving on here to wrap this up. Ted Nugent was in town to promote these gun bills, which, again, I think is great. But will Ted Nugent be back when it's the Republicans who are standing in the way of getting these bills passed? I love to see it. It's good to see all this effort for pro-gun bills, but I can't help but ask myself, what's really going on here? And are they going to push them? Why are they bringing all these people? Why is Ted Nugent coming to Wisconsin when they know damn well Tony Evers is going to veto it, and they have no plans to actually get this thing passed? And it's also funny along these same lines, someone mentioned that Tony Evers was on Up Front with Channel 12. And Tony Evers said he was asked about this constitutional carry bill. And this was his response. I put this on the Wisconsin Carry MeWe page. And I'm going to play it for you here in a second, because I want to get to this soundbite. I'm just playing this off my computer speakers. I didn't upload the clip to my Blog Talk mixer board, but you should be able to hear it. This is Tony Evers being interviewed by the anchor from Channel 12, asking him about the constitutional carry bill that's been introduced. Give it a listen here. Hopefully you can hear this well.
So we'll release some new legislation this past week. One of the proposals would eliminate the need for concealed carry licenses in Wisconsin. Would you veto that bill?
Well, I'd have to take a look at it. Obviously, as I recall, I think Scott Walker did not support that idea. I want to see how it plays out. I understand that's what's headed my way, but I haven't seen it, and I haven't done anything other than read what they're doing in blue spaces. So I feel really important that I not talk about something I have not seen yet in any way or have read them. But I do recall that former Governor Walker vetoed that previously.
So there's the talking point right away. And he's right. Tony Evers, the anchor from Channel 12 asked Tony Evers about the constitutional carry bill and asked if he's going to veto it. And of course, Tony Evers doesn't want to say, yeah, I'm going to veto. He wants to have his cake and eat it too. He says, well, I don't know. I'd rather see the bill before I decide, before I say if I'm going to veto it or not. But then he throws it out there. I understand that Governor Walker didn't support that either. And he was right. Scott Walker didn't support it. Scott Walker came on TV and said, any bill that makes it to my desk has to have mandatory training and a permit. He said that in 2011. And then he turned around in 2017 when he was asked about the constitutional carry bill then And he said, "Oh, I like Wisconsin's. I think Wisconsin's law the way it is. I think we've got it right here the way it is with the training and the mandatory training and permits." So I mean, here Tony Evers doesn't have to. He's no idiot. He doesn't have to say that he's anti-gun, and he's just, well, Scott Walker didn't support this either, and he's right. Scott Walker's cold shoulder to gun rights is just the gift that keeps on giving. Which brings me to my next topic here, and this is how, you know, Republicans and conservatives, they still don't know how to fight, and they still don't know how to win. And conservatives need to stop letting liberals dictate their behavior with the heckler's veto. Now, there's a story on Fox News. Herschel Walker is running for Senate, and his campaign canceled a fundraising event with a group that had a picture where they created a swastika out of syringes with the COVID vaccine shot in them. And so they used a syringe to make it in the shape of a swastika. And as a result, Herschel Walker canceled a fundraising event with this conservative / right of center organization because he disagreed with the symbolism of a swastika. Now, obviously, if someone was using a swastika on their a straight up Nazi swastika on their promotional materials, that would seem to be appropriately offensive, something that shouldn't be a part of your fundraising, a part of your marketing collateral. But the use of syringes as a swastika, as a symbol of what's going on with coronavirus and vaccine mandates, I think it's completely appropriate, in my opinion. And the fact that it offends liberals must mean it's a powerful and impactful statement. And this is why Republicans need to learn how to win the media battles, not cave into them. So because this conservative group had a promotional piece that used the symbolism of a swastika made out of COVID-19 vax syringes to make their point about the totalitarian world we're living in here in this country right now, then Herschel Walker distanced himself from the group and canceled his fundraising appearance. And again, Republicans cave. Republicans don't know how to win the media battles. They don't even know how to fight them. It's like they learned nothing from Trump. But here's how this works. You need to wag the media dog. And how do you wag the media dog? You find the issues that the media thinks the public is on their side, on the lefty side, and you attack on those issues. And the libs and media will make you famous, and you get the airtime to appeal to all the people who actually agree with you. Because there are a shit ton of 75-25 issues in conservatives' favor, not Republicans' favor, but in conservatives' favor that you can do this on. The media thinks the world's on their side, but the media lives in a coasty bubble of elitism, and it's only the liberal elites that feel that way. And the elected libs and the party loyalist activists, the community organizer type people, you know, that's the actual party members of the Democratic Party. It's about 25% of the population. But when Republicans are afraid to even look, this group that's going to have Herschel Walker come speak, they've got a syringe swastika on their promotional material. If the lefty media wants to make a big deal about it, let them make a big deal. It's free promotion from your group for your group. When they stick a television camera in your face, say, don't you think that's overkill? Don't you think that's a swastika, which was the symbol of a regime that murdered, you know, millions of Jews? Do you think that's appropriate? Do you think that this is really? And then the response that you should give is, yeah, I think it's completely appropriate. And then draw the connection. Draw the connection of why using syringes in the shape of a swastika to blast what's going on here right now, The media says, oh, how horrible to use that swastika symbol. And, you know, a Republican conservative should be saying, yeah, forcing people to take an experimental shot that doesn't work, that the media refuses to cover the side effects of, that the medical community is discouraged from even reporting side effects of, that go along because the government says it's the thing to do. Yes, that's exactly how the Nazis came to power. Connect the dots here. What we're seeing in this country right now is exactly the kind of thing that they saw in Nazi Germany. So instead of running away from the symbolism of the swastika because the media is going to try to make you out to be some terrible person for using it, embrace it. Not embrace the swastika, but embrace the coverage. And again, it wasn't a swastika. It was a syringe swastika. When the media says, but do you think a vaccine mandate is the same as slaughtering millions of Jews? Again, trying to use their heckler's veto to get you to stop use. If the media thought that swastika syringe was going to hurt the cause of that conservative outlet, they wouldn't be calling for them to remove it. The Democrats and the liberals and the media, one and the same, they can't have that kind of symbolism out there because they're worried that people are going to start thinking about it. They know how the mindset, they know how this works. You put it out there and people start to think about it. If you phrase these vaccine mandates in the frame of Nazi Germany, it starts to get people thinking, and that's not a bad thing. And that's the reason the media has such a big deal about it. The media is not, the media could care less if something's, if the media thought people were going to be all offended and turned off by it, they'd put it on every broadcast, every newscast. The media wants that swastika symbol gone. They're going to try to use their cancel culture to do it because they know, and here Republicans take something that would have been an effective tool in the media, in the cultural war, and they apologize, take it down, allow the Democrats to dictate their strategies. But again, it's so easy. When the media makes a big deal about, oh, this group had a swastika syringe, how terrible. And then they put their experts on and say, that's just terrible. The Nazis slaughtered millions of Jews, and what we have in this country asking people is to save lives, not slaughter lives. The slaughter is people that refuse to get vaccinated. Use that media time to draw the connection, to point out how the policies of unelected bureaucrats and lemming-like liberals, elected officials, have what they've done. Hundreds of thousands of people have died needlessly from coronavirus, died as a result of government orders, not in a gas chamber, in a hospital with a ventilator strapped to their face, refusal to use hydroxychloroquine, refusal to allow ivermectin, lies in the media, absolute lies regarding studies, regarding what works, lies regarding that the vaccines work, lies that masks work. This science is settled bullshit. The things that the Democrats and the liberals have done the past year has cost thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. Listen to the stories of people who were hospitalized and became captives of the hospital administration, wouldn't allow them to transfer out to a different hospital that would allow prescriptions for ivermectin. There's a famous case in Chicago about this. I already mentioned earlier in the show, Aurora Healthcare published a prohibition on the use of ivermectin for COVID and prohibited Aurora pharmacies from dispensing it for COVID. And you haven't heard about the case study except for here on my show, up in Canada at a nursing home where they had the scabies outbreak and they treated them with ivermectin for scabies. And lo and behold, none of the elderly people got COVID, while all the staff that wasn't treated with ivermectin, they came down with COVID. We're working with the elderly residents on a daily basis and didn't give any of them COVID because all of the elderly residents were on ivermectin for scabies. But back to my point, the government is literally killing people by policy here in this country. The co-conspiracy between Big Pharma and the National Institutes of Health refusal to embrace any kind of treatment for coronavirus that isn't really expensive and rationed. Again, remdesivir that Fauci was promoting last spring, vaccines that aren't vaccines. They're really semi-annual government treatments that make you immune dependent on a shot from the government instead of your own body's fabulous immune system. There's no push for healthy people out there, which would save lives. Government doesn't want healthy people. Healthy people don't need government. You're healthy, you don't need government. You don't need socialized medicine. You don't need government dictated shots every 6 months for the rest of your life to be conditioned to obedience. And how about the Biden administration cutting off the supply of monoclonal antibodies to the antibody clinics down in Florida? That's literally trying to kill people by not giving them treatments. So yeah, the syringe swastika is a completely appropriate comparison to make. So Republicans need to learn how to fight instead of backing down and apologizing. Make the media sorry that they made an issue out of that swastika syringe marketing piece. Make the media sorry they got roped into giving airtime to the people who came up with that imagery for the swastika syringe. True freedom-minded folks that are willing to stand up and fight would see that. They would see, oh, here's this organization. They put up made a swastika syringe, which I think is completely appropriate, that we are getting close to Nazi Germany here in this country. And then they didn't back down when the media tried to put them on blast. That shows people that you got some fight in you. That's what people will support that. And Trump proved the concept of how to fight and win and use the media, wag the media dog. Stop letting the libs control you. Stop letting the libs dictate your strategy. Stop letting the libs wage asymmetrical warfare, doing things that to us that we refuse to do to them. This last week, the Dan O'Donnell show, he was discussing the election investigation, and he had Michael Gableman on. Michael Gableman's a retired Supreme Court justice who is heading up the task force. I don't know if I call it task force, but he's investigating the election fraud, if you want to call it that, here in the election irregularities here in Wisconsin from last November. And when Michael Gableman, a Supreme Court justice, retired Supreme Court justice, made a reference to Joseph Goebbels, who was the Nazi propaganda minister, compare the Journal Sentinel to Joseph Goebbels or something like that, Dan O'Donnell took issue with it. Dan O'Donnell, the conservative, took issue with it. Do you really think that's appropriate to make that Joseph Goebbels comparison? And Dan and Michael Gableman said, well, don't you think it fits? And Dan O'Donnell said, well, no, I don't. And so then Dan countered with, no, I think it's more of a comparison to Pravda. Pravda is the so they agreed on Pravda. Pravda is a Russian newspaper that was the official newspaper of the Communist Party. But, I mean, here's a conservative, Dan O'Donnell, and another conservative, Michael Gableman. And Dan O'Donnell, Michael Gableman wants to use the Goebbels reference in his characterizations of the Journal Sentinel. And you got another conservative. Oh, no, you can't do it. Do you think you would ever hear a liberal say, if someone compared Trump to someone on CNN called Trump a Nazi, do you ever think you'd hear another anchor say, well, Hillary, do you really think it's appropriate to compare Trump to Hitler? And then if Hillary said, well, yeah, I do, don't you? And then the anchor said, well, no, I really don't think that's appropriate. You'd never hear that coming out of the left. But here you got an example where I think it's very appropriate to compare Joseph Goebbels and his propaganda techniques to the stuff that's going on coming out of the Journal Sentinel in Milwaukee. And then but instead of letting the Democrats get their undies in a wad over that, Dan O'Donnell himself, oh, no, I don't think you. Dan O'Donnell corrects Michael Gableman. It's like he's trying to prevent Michael Gableman from making a gaffe or something that the media is going to make hay with. Let the media make hay. It's free press. But Republicans just don't know how to fight. They have no backbone. They back down. So, yeah, so Dan thought that the Journal Sentinel and their massive spin was more appropriate to categorize them as Pravda. And so then they agreed, Michael Gableman agreed, okay, well, we'll agree on Pravda. It's more like Pravda. And it's bullshit. The New York Times is Pravda. the elected officials who are using their authority to influence media, private corporations, they are Gable-esque. They aren't fronting as a newspaper. They're actively using the controls of government to influence, censor, and steal the voice of people. Hell, they stole an election. Without a stolen election, we'd have no border crisis. We'd have no supply chain crisis. We'd have no rank inflation. We'd have no vaccine mandates for airlines and for businesses over 100 people. Fauci would be gone. Honestly, if Trump was president, I believe he'd have fired that fucker Fauci the day after the election was over and immediately gone to battle with the insanity that he knew was taking place. I wish it would have happened, but it would be so awesome just to, maybe it would be depressing to see if Trump had won. I think if Trump, well, Trump did win, but if the Democrats hadn't stolen the election, I believe the day after the election with Trump reelected, you'd have seen Trump come out swinging. Because it was his last term, doesn't have to worry about re-election. I think you saw Trump come out swinging, firing Fauci, putting on blast the crazy bullshit that had been going on with around coronavirus. Again, we'll never know. But anyway, the direct link between what the Democrats are doing and their propaganda and the death of hundreds of thousands of people needlessly, there is a direct link. But here we have conservatives that are self-censoring and failing to draw the most easiest of connections. It's just pathetic. Anyway, that's the show for tonight. Really late here, 10:50. That's too late for me. I start to lose my mental sharpness when I'm this tired this late in the day. But anyway, that was the show. Hope you enjoyed it. I had some more. I actually left some notes in the other room that I had about the package of bills that the Republicans are introducing. I'll read those over. Maybe I'll talk about it next week if I get a show in here next week. But anyway, thank you for tuning in. To you guys who caught the podcast, who are catching the podcast, who just listened to the show on podcast. I know there's a lot of you, Tom in Madison and my friend Phil down in Alabama and my brother out in California and all kinds of other folks that catch the podcast. Speaking of which, I did get your email and I forgot to, I have it in my inbox of my work email that I meant to review it and maybe make some comments on the show, but I did get it, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it. So anyway, you guys have a great week. Stay free, carry on, and be well armed. And don't forget Tuesday, 2A Tuesday. Have a great week.
Sniper Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.